If you're new to us today and you have a child from preschool age up through fifth grade, we invite you to go back with your children and just touch base with our student leaders so they can get some information from you. So there's a gentleman by the name of Millard Fuller who was, he had learned in his life how to make money. Millard Fuller, when he was a young man, I think he was about 12, his father bought him a pig. So some of you farm boys, farm girls, maybe you'd take some lessons here. His father bought him a pig. And he learned how to calculate the cost of caring for and feeding that pig and the right time to sell it at a profit. And he started making money at the age of 12, and his father would give him more animals or he'd gain more animals. And by the time he went off to college, he learned how to sell everything. He and his roommate would sell all kinds of things, sandwiches to other students. And so, like, unlike many poor, struggling college students, he and his roommate, it's reported that they had raised almost $50,000 a year each while going through college. And when he left school, he started his own business, grew it to become a multi-million dollar business, and spent most of his energy and emphasis in that. He would later get married, but it would become evident to others that Millard's passion was his career. And so he would work and work and work. He believed that he was giving his wife everything she needed. She had a car, she had a personal driver, she had boats, she had houses, she had everything she could dream of, except the present husband. Many times he would go to work and not return until late in the evening, maybe midnight. If he did come home for dinner, he'd go back to work and maybe come home at midnight. And one day he came home to find a note from his wife saying, "I no longer want to be in this marriage," and she was gone. So he searched for her, and he searched for her, and he searched for her, and he eventually found her up in New York. I think they were in Alabama. And so he found a way to get to her, and he sat down with her, and they, throughout the evening, began discussing the realities of their lives, all that they have amassed, all that they have done, and realized that it wasn't what they hoped it would be. And from that night, they began to search what should be true in their lives. And they found themselves at a Christian community. There, they got a vision from God to change their pursuits. They sold everything that they had. They started helping people who struggled financially to build houses, engaging them in the building process, engaging the community in the building process. And out of it came what we later would know as Habitat for Humanity. Now, since Millard has moved on from Habitat for Humanity, but he still continues to do work such as that, building houses all over the world. And what he and his wife learned is, I think, a principle that we all need to understand is that every move towards something is a move from something else. We've been talking about Abraham's journey, and in Abraham's journey of faith, it is a journey of movement. Our faith should move us, but anything that moves us towards something will move us away from something else. For Millard, early in his life, his movement was towards his career, not recognizing it was moving him away from relationships that mattered to him. And then he and his wife would learn that a movement towards something that was really valuable and impactful was far greater than what they were leaving behind in the past life that they experienced. My this morning is to recognize that any move in our lives is going to be that. To you students, you're stepping into a new stage of life. Every movement to something will be a movement from something. And we all know that to be true. We see that in the biblical examples. Think about Abram's call. His move towards the promise was a move from his father's household, from everything that he once knew. We see that call to Peter. Peter's move to following Jesus was a movement from his fishing nets. The call to Matthew to follow Jesus was a movement from the tax booth. One of my favorite examples is the example of Elisha. The prophet Elisha, there was a prophet in the nation of Israel named Elijah who believed himself to be alone, and so God gave him an apprentice. His name was Elisha. And Elijah goes and he finds Elisha, and Elisha is plowing fields with 12 different groups of oxen, which was an indication that he and his family had money. And so Elijah goes to Elisha and throws his cloak over him, indicating that he would be his understudy, his apprentice. And Elisha's saying, what are you doing? And Elijah says, what have I done? You go back and do what you need to do. And here's what we read Elisha does. So Elisha, 1 Kings 19:21, Elisha left him and went back. He took his yoke of oxen and slaughtered them. He burned the plowing equipment to cook the meat and gave it to the people, and they ate. And then he set out to follow Elijah and became his attendant. What did he do? He burned every attachment to the past and pushed forward to what God was calling him to. Every move towards something will be a move from something. I share with our students, I think we all face this. Throughout life, we are confronted with what I would call threshold moments. They're moments where we stand at a doorway of moving from what we knew into something new and unknown. And many times what we do is we say, because I don't know what's on the other side of that, I'm going to stay where I am. Even if where I am is not where I want to be. Because where I am, I know. I'm comfortable with it. And to move into that realm is unknown and scary. We're all confronted with threshold moments, and the difference is individuals who say, you know what, I will step through the threshold into the unknown. I will let go of what lays behind to push on towards what God has for me in the future. Sometimes we look to what we once had in those fears and we redefine it. Think about the Israelites as they were called out of slavery. As they're wandering through the wilderness, moving towards the land of promise because it was uncomfortable and difficult, they would often say, if only we could go back to Egypt. We had cucumbers there and melons there, and we had all the food we wanted, forgetting that they were throwing their babies in the river. Isn't it interesting that we could look back and redefine where we've come from because we're so uncomfortable with the journey of going to something new? Every move requires a move from something. And here's some truths in Abraham's journey that I think we should keep in mind as we journey in our own faith. The first is this: we all move in stages. As I was reading through the text, there was something that stood out to me. You may be reading in the NIV this morning. You would find in these verses that Abraham moved from place to place. But in the Christian Standard Bible, in Genesis chapter 12, verse 9, I want you to jump there. Genesis chapter 12, verse 9, it says this: then Abram journeyed by stages to the Negev, to the Southland. In Genesis 13, verses 1 through 3, in the Christian Standard Bible, this is what we read. And Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev, he, his wife, and all he had, and Lot with him. Abram was very rich in livestock, silver, and gold. He went by stages from the Negev to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had formerly been. Isn't that how we always journey? It's by stages. Very rarely are we immediately where we want to be. I don't know if you remember, I wasn't a big Star Trek fan, but I remember seeing the show. I anticipated the day where if I was like, oh, I want to go on vacation, beam me up, Scotty, and now I'm in Florida. Hasn't happened yet. We don't have hover skateboards. We don't have any of those things that the movies told us we were going to have. Very rarely do we immediately end up where we want to be. We travel in stages. And what that indicates to me is that where I'm at is not permanent. And maybe you're in a place in your life right now where it's difficult and it's a slog, it's a burden. The reality of traveling in stages tells me that I won't be there forever. That it's a season, it's a time, and God is moving me through that stage to where he ultimately wants me to be. Perhaps that stage feels overwhelming. I see it as parents. You walk through stages as a parent. And when your children are young and they're into everything and it's demanding, you might think that, man, this is a stage I'll live in forever. And I have parents saying to me all the time, enjoy it because it's going to be gone. And it is hard, I'll be honest, it's hard. When you're a young person, you're the older individuals like, oh, it'll be gone in a flash. And you're like, okay. But we all know there's stages. We're journeying through stages. The truth is, the journey of our lives is a stage. We will not live in the brokenness of sin forever. We will not live in the burdens of this world forever. One day, this stage will end, and we will enter in the stage of eternity in which we enjoy all of God's goodness and blessing beyond measure. I think it's also important in the stages to understand how investments work. I had a conversation with somebody recently who was sharing about investments that they had made in the church or in a church, and maybe frustrated because those investments were moved on from to something different, something new. And I think a lot of times when we invest, particularly if we invest in the church, we feel a sense of ownership, and that's good. We should feel a sense of ownership. But what happens is we start to think that just because my investment had a stage or a season, it wasn't valuable. If you invest in something and it's simply for a season, and a new season comes, that doesn't mean that that investment wasn't important. For that stage, for that season, your investment in that thing was valuable, it was meaningful, and new stages and new seasons come. I think it's also important for young people. I see so many people who are engaged. Maybe you're engaged in a relationship and you've been in a relationship for 3 years or 5 years or 7 years, and you know, if you were honest with yourself, you know that the relationship is not healthy and you've not yet made a commitment before God and others in that relationship, and yet you remain in it. Why? Because that would be a wasted investment. I just wasted 3 years of my life. I just wasted 7 years of my life. It's not a waste. God, through that, may have shown you greater demands or desires or perspectives of what you truly want in a relationship. It'd be far better to step out of that before a commitment than to stay in it when you know it's unhealthy. One of the things I think that we fail to do as believers in stages is we all know we journeyed through stages. You didn't get where you are today instantly. You walked through valleys, you had high peaks in your life, you succeeded, you failed, you journeyed in faith. But what happens in the Christian realm is we find ourselves higher on the ladder of faith. Maybe we've matured in our faith over the years, and what we do is we kick out all of the rungs underneath us, and then we demand those coming behind us to be where we are, but not being allowed to walk the rungs of the stages. Does that make sense? In essence, we're here in spiritual maturity, but we're here because we've journeyed through faith. We've had ups and downs, we've failed, we've done all of these things, and God has brought us to a place. Somebody coming in behind us also has to walk through stages. We can't demand that they are where we are and not allow them to walk the stages of faith that God will walk them through as well. We walk through stages. And when we journey, while we walk through stages, I believe that in every stage, we just need to make sure that we're moving towards worship. Wherever you find yourself, make sure that you're moving towards worship. Notice Genesis chapter 13, verses 3 through 4, what it says about Abram. It says he went by stages from the Negev to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had formerly been, to the site where he had built the altar, and Abram called on the name of the Lord there. Now, if we go back in the journey, what did Abram was called out of the land that he knew to the land of promise. He journeys there, and when he gets there, the God who spoke to him appears to him. So he builds an altar to worship God. Famine hits the land, and so he decides to leave, not by a call of God, not by a word of God, but because of fear. He leaves and heads towards Egypt. In Egypt, he receives material blessing, and often I think we confuse blessing with material things. I think as a church, we need to shift blessing and not solely define it as material things. Especially when we read what Jesus says in the Beatitudes, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are the poor in spirit. Very little, if any, has to do with material things. He's blessed with material things, but over time, some of those things will become a burden to him. He's kicked out of Egypt, and where does he find himself again? The place where his tent had formerly been. the place where he worshiped God. I wonder if much of our journey in faith is actually God moving us back to worship. How much of our journey of faith is us walking away from God, walking contrary to his will, and he nudges and he stirs and he calls us back to worship, calls us back to himself. Maybe there's seasons in our life where we're walking toward God and we're pursuing him. I think that's the journey of faith. It's us constantly moving toward God or him nudging us to come back. In every stage, make sure that you're moving back towards worship, that you're moving towards God in all that you pursue. Recognize that worship is not simply to sing. Worship is to fall flat on our face before God. It's an aspect of humility and surrender. And when I walk in a way that's contrary to the will of God, it's hard to worship. To say, I do not submit to you, I will not surrender to you, it's hard to worship. When Jesus was asked about the place of worship, he revealed that it's not a certain place in which worship occurs. Those who worship me will worship in spirit and in truth. So I can worship God wherever I am. But if I am walking in contrast to the will of God, my spirit testifies that I'm not walking in truth. And God continually seeks to draw me back to himself, to move me back to a place of worship. We see the contrast of Lot. Later we read that Lot and Abram had to separate. And while Abram is being drawn to a place of worship, Lot seems to walk towards what is pleasing to his eyes. Read in verse 10, it says, Lot looked up and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt towards Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Moses adds that little paragraph or statement. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out toward the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tent near Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. Notice that Moses twice gives depiction of the reality of the world or the community in which Lot was moving towards. It was a city that was slated for destruction because they were sinning greatly against the Lord. And Lot looks and sees what is pleasing to his eyes, the same thing that happened in the Garden of Eden, and that's what's driving his pursuit. Now, Lot may not engage in the things of that wicked environment, but he was placing himself in a vulnerable position. Now, recognize in our own journey, we often flirt with the line. If the call is to move towards worshiping God, what I see so often in my own self or have seen in the Christian faith is Christians will say, well, what's the line of sin? What's the line that if I cross over it, I'll step into sin? And when we determine that line, what we do is we say, okay, how close to the line can I get without falling into sin? I've even heard preachers who say, we will do nothing short of sin to draw people to our church. To me, it seems opposite of what we should be moving toward. If I am to move toward worship, move toward God, a movement toward God is going to move me as far away from that line as I can possibly go. And when I try to skirt the line, if I stumble and fall, the repercussions are more dangerous. What I recognize in Lot's life, and for our young people, in relationships, you may not get caught up in the choices of those you surround yourself with, but you can face the collateral damage when you live in the splash zone. If you're surrounding yourself, the proverb says, a friend of fools suffers harm. I don't need to be a fool to suffer harm. I just need to hang out with a bunch of fools. Because the collateral damage of their decision, if I'm close enough in proximity, if I'm living in the splash zone, it's going to impact me too. So here's my encouragement. I shared this last week. So often, we don't choose friends, we gravitate towards acceptance. I think there are zones of relationship that you need to consider. The first zone is a broader zone that more people fall into. It's the zone of individuals I hope to influence. You may have relationships in a broader spectrum that they're people that you want to impact, you want to care for, you want to pour into their lives. That's a legitimate zone of relationship to have. There's a much smaller zone of relationship, which is the zone of those who influence me. And in that zone, I want to choose who those people are. I don't want to just gravitate towards whoever accepts me, because what if they're not going in the same direction that I want to go in? For Lot and Abram, it wasn't that Lot was no longer willing to serve. We'll read later that he would give of himself, he would be willing to sacrifice his own life to protect Lot. But we're heading in different directions. And then there's one super, super small circle. It's the circle of the zone of intimacy. And it's the relational connection that God desires for you to have with one person. And in that zone of relationship, that person that I choose probably should not come from the zone of people I hope to influence. Evangelism dating and evangelism marriage rarely works. Not saying it never does, rarely works. If you're going into a marriage and you're saying, you know what, I'll fix them, not a good start. I believe that in that smallest zone of connection, that should be a person that shares your values, that is heading in the same direction, that is just as passionate as pursuing the Lord and pursuing God's worship as you are. So be cautious. In the journeys that you take, make sure that you're choosing the right relationships. Move towards worship. Don't skirt the line. And understand that in it, every move will require separation. If I move towards something, it will be a move from something. When you choose to move towards God, it will likely bring conflict in your life. Because it is going to bring separation. Jesus himself said a statement, and we don't hear it preached on often, but Jesus said, I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. What did that mean? From the Prince of Peace. He goes on to say, come to pit mother against father, or mother against daughter, father against son. What Jesus was indicating is that those who choose to follow me may even see separation from their family. Because there will be other individuals who say, yeah, you're a little radical. You're taking this whole Jesus thing a little too far. Students, you're gonna walk into spaces where you're gonna hear you're narrow-minded, you're a bigot, you're unintelligent. The world is gonna throw a fence at you. There's gonna be separation when you say, I choose to follow Jesus. You probably faced it already. Jesus himself said, those who follow me must love me more than mother, father, brother, sister, wife, husband. My pursuit of him transcends every other relationship. And Paul wrote to Timothy, all those who seek to live godly will suffer persecution. So the reality is that if I follow Jesus, it will require some form of separation. That's what Moses experiences. Listen to what it says in verse 5, Genesis 13, verse 5. It says, now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram's herdsmen and the herdsmen of Lot. The Canaanites and Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. What Abram finds is that there had to be some separation, and I think it was bigger than land. I believe that in Abram's mind, he thought that Lot might be the fulfillment of the promise. God promised to give Abram great descendants and to give him the land. We see later that he thought one of his servants, Eleazar, would be the fulfillment of the promise. He later asked that Ishmael, the son of Hagar, would be the fulfillment of the promise. So I think God was saying to him, no, I am going to give you a seed through Sarai. So it was broader than just separating so that they could have enough land. It was separating from false hopes. Every move in my life will require separation. It might be for you separation from your past. All these lingering thoughts and ideas of the mistakes and the failures that you made that keep coming at you, telling you you're not good enough. God can never love you. God can never forgive you. Your move towards Him may require a separation from those lies. He has overcome your sin. He has covered your sin. He has declared you holy and righteous. He has said you are dearly loved. Perhaps your move towards Him is a separation from that past. Some of you, you've made that decision just recently. You're deciding to walk towards God and do what God has asked you to do. There are laws of the harvest. We find it in Galatians, 3 laws of the harvest. You reap what you sow. My farmers will tell me, if I put corn in the ground, I'm going to get corn out of the ground. You reap what you sow. You always reap more than you sow. So I might put one seed in, but I get a whole lot of seeds out. The third law of the harvest is you reap later. And for some of you, you may have said, okay, God, I'm willing to move towards you, but yet you're still experiencing reaping your past, the things of your past. And you may be discouraged and wondering, well, when is this going to change? Understand that you reap later. So some of those things may still be lingering from what you sowed in the past, but stay faithful in sowing to what God has called you to sow today, because in due time, you will reap something new. In that text, Paul says, do not grow weary in doing what is good, for in due time, you will reap a harvest. My brothers and sisters who have maybe stepped into faith recently and you're wrestling with, yeah, but nothing's changing yet. You reap later. Stay faithful in sowing to the new thing that God has called you to. Maybe it's a separation from false hopes. For Abram, he had to get rid of the false hope of Lot being the fulfillment of the promise. And maybe you've clung to things that could never fulfill you, that would never bring abundant life. Perhaps it's a separation from past ties and past relationships. If Abram stayed with his father, he would have missed out on a blessing. If Abram stayed with Lot, he would have missed out on a blessing. His move towards what God had for him required relational separation. As I sensed in my life God calling me to something, I didn't quite know what that meant. But that calling took me away from my home. And as I pursued that calling, God made it more and more clear. He confirmed it through the body of Christ. He started changing pursuits and desires in my life. And I can remember, as I got older and older and older, there was a time when I just loved going home. There was something about it, the nostalgia. It felt like it was mine, like I run this town, even though nobody knew who I was. That's just how I felt. But something changed, and there got to this point where, so I grew up in Sharon, Pennsylvania. My mom's here this morning from Sharon. I go out 322, I hop up to 80, and I head through 80 and get into Sharon, and it's something, I always felt like there was a time portal on Interstate 80 where I would enter back into the 1990s. And I see some of the guys I used to hang with and run with, and it's like they haven't moved out of the 90s. I had a long conversation with some young guys the other day, and they were surprised by it. When I was younger, I was into gangster rap and all this stuff. I thought I was a little thug. Little 160-pound white boy thug. And then I go back, and we're 40. And guys are still acting that way. I'm like, we're 40. What are you doing? Rappers don't even act that way anymore. They don't even dress that way anymore. Do-rags, pants sagging. I'm like, what is happening? And I heard, and maybe you could tell me if I was wrong, I heard that there were people who said, Phil's a snob. Maybe.
But I was no longer content.
To remain where we were. I was no longer content to say it's everybody else's fault. This is why we can't get anywhere. This is why nothing can happen. I was no longer content with that. And so if that made me a snob, I guess I was a snob. There's a preacher that I hear snippets from. I think he's really, really powerful. I think God's anointing is on him. His name is Philip Anthony Mitchell. Just preaches the word. And he made a statement recently. He said, I owe everybody love, but I don't owe everybody access. In Romans 13, it says, owe no man anything except to love them. I owe you love. You owe others love, but you do not owe everybody access. There's somebody who might enter into your life who would bring damage to you and your family and the blessing that God has called you to or is moving you to. You don't owe them access. Sometimes my pursuit of worship, my pursuit of God requires separation. And it may be a relational separation. Again, it's not that Abram would not do what needed to be done for Lot. When Lot is taken from his home by five kings, Abram would muster together a very small group of men in comparison and go fight to get Lot back. So it wasn't that he wasn't willing to offer love and care, but there was a relational separation. Young men, young women, as you pursue what God is calling you to, there may be some relational separations that have to occur. Every move towards something is a move from something. And finally, understand that in your moves, whatever you relinquish will be rewarded. Your reward will outweigh what you give up. Your reward will outweigh what you relinquish. Our journey toward God and toward worship will be a sacrifice. We read in Genesis chapter 13, verses 8 through 9, so Abram said to Lot, let's not have any quarreling between you and me or between your herdsmen and mine, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you, so let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. Abram is the older individual. Abram is the one who's been given the promise, but he defers to Lot. He tells Lot, you choose first, and wherever you go, I'll go the opposite direction. That was a sacrifice. But I want you to notice what God says to Abram. Verse 14. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had parted from him, lift up your eyes from where you are and look north and south, east and west. All the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you. Now he says to Lot, if you go to the east, I'll go to the west. If you go to the west, I'll go to the east. But after Lot leaves, God says to Abram, look in which directions? North, south, east, west. The promise wasn't to Lot. The promise was to Abram. And God was going to fulfill his promise to Abram. All this land is yours. So whatever Abram was relinquishing, God was going to reward beyond what he could ever fathom. And I'm picturing Abram. God says, walk the land. I'm picturing him walk this land that is foreign to him, that is owned by the enemy. I wonder what they're thinking. Who's this dude? You know, walking through our yards? But that land did not belong to the enemy. Maybe you need to walk some land that the enemy has taken control of in your life. In Ephesians, Paul says, do not let the sun set on your anger. Why? Because in doing so, you will give the devil a foothold. The Greek word for that word foothold is topos. It's from the word from which we get topography, the layout of land. And what Paul is saying, by going to sleep in my anger, I am giving land to the enemy. Maybe you need to claim some land back in your marriage, in your personal life, in your home. Maybe you've given some tapas, some land to the enemy, but it's not. Perhaps today you need to take some walks, reclaiming what God has promised to be yours in your home. We recognize in Abram's life, and it's true in ours, that whatever we relinquish, God will reward. The disciples said to Jesus, Jesus, we gave up everything. And Jesus says, all those who gave up for me, I will reward 10 times more. Jesus said, what good is it a man to gain the whole world yet lose his soul? But the one who loses his life will find it. The reality of our journey of faith is this battle of my flesh saying, do whatever you want, enjoy whatever you want, sleep with whoever you want, whatever it is, pursue it, versus, no, I'm going to follow the will of the Lord and trust that whatever I relinquish will be worth it in the end. That's a hard journey. We all face it every moment of every day. Do I truly follow the Lord and say, yeah, I trust that whatever I'm giving up in this world will be worth it in the end? Brothers and sisters, every move towards Jesus is worth far more than what we're moving from. But that will be your journey of faith. Do I truly believe that? Or will I give in and say, you know what, I'm just going to follow whatever I desire? Every move towards something is a move from something. Abraham found himself once again at a place of worship. And in each stage that you're stepping into, I pray that that's where you'll find yourself. Graduates, high school graduates, college graduates, you're stepping into a new stage. Make sure that your moves are towards God. Make sure that every step you take is towards worship of God. And may we as a church consistently move towards Him in all that we do.